Hey, Anna, this is going to be a big year in astronomy. 2020 is. We've got a lot of anniversaries. We got a lot of birthdays. Mm. And there's actually two big ones for the science fiction community. You're very immersed in the science fiction community, correct?
So deep.
You love science fiction.
I mean, no, because I'm cool, but yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, so
I know you love science fiction.
Well, let me tell you something for once about culture. Okay, nerdy.
I was going to say, maybe, is this real culture?
Maybe 20th century
subculture?
Culture. Yeah. But are the two big names in science fiction, Isaac Asimov and Ray Bradbury, are both celebrating 100th birthdays in 2020. These are like the titans of the science fiction genre from the 20th century. And yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting. They're both turning 100. They're both not around, but you know, like, so for, but they're somewhere in the universe.
Yeah,
so we're just wanted to honor them. But
of course,
there's going to be a lot of science fiction talks coming up here. And, maybe not today.
Can't wait. Oh,
boy,
yeah.
That was the fakest enthusiasm I've ever heard.
I'm so excited.
I know. Isn't it great? Well, we'll talk about the Martian Chronicles and Nightfall and all sorts of other stuff.
I think I have to go.
Yes. So, stick around for the rest of it. There'll be
great
other stuff. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we are both from the Cincinnati Observatory. Dean's the astronomer, and I'm super curious. On this episode, we'll be joined by John Marcott and Andrew Fazekas from National Geographic's Night Sky Odyssey. So, have you thought about how you're going to celebrate these two big birthdays?
there's so much stuff.
There's so many things
in 2020. And, you know,
that's true.
It's they're one of my favorite science fiction writers. But I'm a classic guy. I go back to H.G. Wells and Jules Verne. So,
of course,
you know, it's hard to top Jules Verne, my book. But, you know, there's lots of other really cool things happen in 2020 also.
What's your definition of cool?
Cool by, you know, things that are up in the sky that are very interesting, that I think, like,
a
lot of people would be interested in.
I'm excited.
Yes. Yes. I mean, so
what's happening?
Well, when we look back at last year, I mean, we can think of the big highlights of last year. Mm-hmm. We had a lunar eclipse in January. We had the Apollo 11 anniversary. That was pretty big.
Yeah, it was huge.
We had the transit of Mercury in November. So there's nothing. We don't have any eclipses. We don't have any transits. We have, you know, some birthdays. But the big things that I'm looking forward to early on in the year 2020, we're going to have a lot of Venus Moon conjunctions.
What do you mean a lot?
A lot, like five in a row. So we're going to have these times where, you know, Venus is the brightest looking star in the sky. Even though it's a planet, it shines like a star, but it's so incredibly bright, people start noticing it. And this is, it's all visible in the evening right after dark. And the best time to see Venus is when the little crescent moon is right next to it. So it looks pretty as a picture with this crescent moon just hanging there right next to this really bright object. And so we're going to have that happen 5 months in a row. So right
5 months. I was thinking like 5 nights right in a row. Just like bam, 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 bam.
Well, the first one will be January 27th and 28th.
My mom and my brother's birthdays.
All right. Then we got February 27th.
Nothing happening that day.
Then we got March 27th.
Okay.
April 26th. And then
April 26th.
Finally.
Okay.
And finally, May 23rd, 24th. So that'll
earlier
be the last ones. Yep.
Okay.
So look for those. But you'll be seeing Venus all winter.
Are we getting a lot of
winter?
Bumps?
We are going to get a lot of calls, a lot of UFO calls, no doubt about that. That's for sure.
And we'll be like, it's Venus, click.
Yep. Yep. We'll just put let's get the recording. Just it's Venus.
That's right.
It's Venus.
Nice.
So the other big anniversary.
Wait, how rare are the conjunctions? Because like the transit, you kind of had me because it was like more of a,
Yeah, since we're going to have five or six or seven, because some of them would be visible two nights a month. So there's lots of chances.
Okay.
There's a lot. So that's the cool thing.
But still fun.
Very fun.
I'm
very
excited.
Fun. Yes, it's very picturesque. I mean, you got the sunset there, all the different colors of the sunset, and it's like you got this crescent moon there.
And the sunset, that's pretty.
I know.
Not
and it's
like
evening.
It, not late at night.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's not late at night, not early morning.
That's weird about Venus. It comes out like before it gets dark.
Yes. It is so bright. It is so bright. So definitely that's something to look for. So we got another birthday slash anniversary coming up to February 18th, the birthday of your favorite non-planet.
Oh my God, I thought you were going to say it, my favorite planet.
No, I'm sorry. Pluto.
Can we edit that out and take the non that Dean says and it says your favorite planet?
Your favorite non-planet. And so Pluto.
So how old is
Pluto? Pluto was discovered in 1930 by American astronomer Clyde Tombaugh. And so he was a young guy, only 24 years old, discoverer of a planet. It was a planet back then, so I can say discovered a planet.
I think you were like sort of like tripped up a little bit.
So you can celebrate. We'll say it's a planet for a day. How about that? That day.
And it's your birthday, Pluto.
Yeah, it's your birthday.
We'll restore you to your former and current glory.
Yes.
That's exciting.
Yes.
Okay, now I'm perked up a little bit.
And then
what else?
We have the 175th birthday of the oldest telescope in the United States.
Where is that?
Our very own Cincinnati Observatory Telescope turns 175 years old. And so it's all.
And looks great.
It looks like it's a brand new out of the box. We got it from.
Out of the box. It was custom built.
It was custom built. Yeah, Munich, Germany, shipped over to Cincinnati and saw first light April 14th, 1845. I mean, it's just incredible this telescope is still going. It still looks so good. And people.
Beautiful.
I mean, it's going to be in the Smithsonian someday. And
not soon.
Not soon, because we're going to keep it.
I think the Air and Space folks were kind of.
You think they were looking at it?
Yeah, I think Ellen was
we shouldn't have told her about it.
We shouldn't have, like, we ain't got no scopes here.
Oh, yeah.
Ma'am.
Sorry, I don't know what you're talking about.
We just look up.
We're a conservatory.
That's right.
We're
not like music and flowers.
Yeah, yeah. But so we're going to have a big event celebrating that here. So definitely come on over, visit us on its 175th year. And just, I mean,
it a present.
Think about all those people that, like, how many generations have looked through our telescope?
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
Because they're public. We were the first public observatory. I mean, such great access.
Yes. Yes.
So lovely.
So I'm super excited about that one.
And you love the Mitchell scope.
I do love the Mitchell scope. That's nice. What we call it.
Oh, sorry.
And it's, we had a birthday party for the other scope, the Clark scope. We have.
I missed that one.
It was a 100th birthday party that
in 2006?
And we, it was, 2004.
Or four. That's right. Yep. I always get
that
six.
That was when it turned 100. So it'll be 116 this year. But for the 100th birthday, we did have a little event up there, and we actually sang Happy Birthday to the telescope. It was a little surreal. I didn't start it. Like, I forget one of our volunteers said, let's sing to the telescope. And I was like, ugh.
Did he have like one of those pointy party hats on the top? That's what I'm envisioning, like on the lens.
We should do that. That's a good idea.
Oh, I will be doing
it. Okay, all right.
I'm part of planning that
the birthday party.
The birthday party. I'm great at party planning.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, my
gosh.
We'll
have to do that. But yeah, the singing, I'll do it. I didn't like it, but I'll do it.
I'm not going to start it.
Well, you know, I mean.
But I'll chime in.
That's right. Yeah.
Maybe
for that scope, you're right. Maybe.
Yeah, that's like your favorite. Yeah.
So now then the other huge
this is the one I'm really excited about.
I mean, this one is probably the one that's gonna break the internet, I think. If because
and maybe the observatory.
Because on Halloween night. Halloween's gonna be on a Saturday this year, which is number one, very exciting. Because what does that mean to you? Saturday Halloween means
Parties,
exactly right.
I mean, not for me because I'm a parent, but yes, other people I'm sure are going to have parties.
Right. Two, it's going to be a full moon.
OMG.
Which is very rare. You have these like maybe once every 19 years, you get a full moon on Halloween. And three, it is a blue moon.
A blue moon.
Which is the second full moon in a calendar month. So we can have a full moon in early October and then one on the 31st. So that means Halloween. On a Saturday with the full moon and a blue moon.
Oh my gosh. It is going to be lit at the observatory.
Exactly.
Our whole staff is already so excited. We have already like blocked the calendar off.
Yep.
It's happening.
Yep.
I can't
it's happening.
Wait.
Now, as an astronomer and a man of science, this has absolutely no value at all whatsoever. I mean, this is, you know, there's nothing cool about a full moon.
Did you just call yourself a man of science?
Yeah, the man of science. So this has no like real scientific ramifications, but it's one of
it's
those things
cool.
I know the public is going to love it. And so we will use this to our advantage.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So those are the big things to look forward to here in 2020. We've talked about dark skies on Looking Up before, but these two gentlemen, in conjunction with National Geographic, have taken the appreciation and importance of dark skies to a new augmented reality. Science Communicator Andrew Fizikas and Operations and Development Director John Marcotte join us to talk about the Night Sky Odyssey. John and Andrew, thanks so much for joining us.
It's our pleasure.
So I met you guys back in September. You were demonstrating this Night Sky Odyssey project you're doing. It was just so cool to witness this, to experience it. I was hoping you guys could tell everybody out there in without any visuals what exactly the Night Sky Odyssey is.
Yeah, well, sure.
Go ahead, John.
So yeah, actually, well, Night Sky Odyssey, we got together with a few partners, and we figured we got a lot of questions about the night sky, and we're like, well, there's got to be an easier way to say what is up in the night sky. So after a lot of thinking, we actually developed this augmented reality experience. So augmented reality compared to virtual reality is when you superimpose images over real objects. So we created this headset that you can actually see through. You're not staring at a screen, but you see through the headset. And while you're looking up at the stars in the sky, the constellations, the images of these constellations are superimposed over the real stars in the sky. And what we've done with this is that we've created a whole storyline that kind of teaches the stories of the night sky. So it's a very cool experience that that people get to use this product and this experience and get to learn about what's the importance of the night sky. So we created this actually because we realized that, you know, we are losing a track of our dark skies. People are moving more and more towards cities, and in cities you can barely see a handful of stars. So this allows people to kind of see what they're missing out on.
And so does this work, or is it kind of another benefit that when it's cloudy or rainy or whatever in the sky, does it still sort of work in those circumstances as well?
Yeah, and that's really what's cool about it is that, and you know, this is often an issue with the astronomy community is when it's cloudy, you kind of have to find other ways to show what's up in the night sky. So with this technology, we get to look up at the sky, and you kind of, I mean, there are clouds, but you get the images superimposed of where those constellations are. Now, what's cool about this is you could go anywhere in the world with this little headset and see the constellations from that point in the world. So if you were in the southern hemisphere, you would see many other constellations, including the Southern Cross, that you might not see in the northern hemisphere, because the device, which uses a cell phone, actually uses the GPS in the cell phone to calculate what is in the sky at what time.
So it's like having your own planetarium. But and then the other thing that was the plus when you guys demonstrated this, Andrew, you were kind of doing the play-by-play. You kind of were the voice to describe kind of like the reactions you've gotten from the public when you're kind of giving them a guided tour.
Well, I mean, this is what the beauty here is that we're not taking away from nature. We're just augmenting it a bit. And the technology is really just there to help people understand what they're seeing. And really, when it comes to things like, particularly like storytelling, a lot of the mythological stories that are behind a lot of the constellations, it's hard for people to really get to see what those constellations really represent. You know, like a really good example is perhaps the Big Dipper being the back end of a bear, or Leo the lion. You know, you can really see the backwards giant sickle shaped pattern of stars, and we superimpose the lines on it, the lines that make up those patterns, and then the mythological figures themselves are superimposed. So you really get to see what those storytelling is about. And we see the motion of the sky as well. And so it really just literally augments the sky. And this is where you get a lot of oohs and ahs from people. And you can see that there's a connection being made that otherwise they've never really experienced, unless they were in a planetarium where they can see this laid out. But this is in front of a real sky. And there's nothing like being under that beauty, you know, that canopy of stars, especially in a dark sky setting, it can actually be very overwhelming for beginners, for newbies, those people that aren't really familiar with the night sky. Going out to a dark location in the countryside, you're seeing perhaps a couple of thousand stars at once, and locating some of the constellations can be quite tricky. To have a technology like this at hand, it's one step further than having, say, an app, a planetarium app on your phone or your tablet, and you hold it up with the GPS. Here, you're actually immersed because you're basically putting that screen right in front of your face, and you're looking through the glasses, being able to see the real sky, and with the mythological figures and all that information superimposed on it.
Yeah, it sounded like, you know, the way that you guys described it, and you're out in nature too. You're not just like in the city. You're out at this kind of like natural amphitheater with this great background, and I think that's one thing that really gets people excited. And the other thing that I saw was, Andrew, you've been writing articles for National Geographic, and those have been, you know, really cool to get people excited. And you're like kind of like the Neil deGrasse Tyson of Canada, right?
That's right. So yeah, as the night sky guy, I mean, it's my passion really to be able to make connections, you know. And one of the things at National Geographic that I've been really trying hard is being able to leverage this wonderful brand of National Geographic and their international audience is really showcasing that, you know, we all share the same heritage of the night sky. That's what's really come to my attention with comments coming back from people, that there's never been so much interest in the night sky like it is now. And it doesn't matter where you are. We all share that same heritage. And in a sense, it's a shame that, you know, we're living in a time period where technology has kind of disconnected us with nature, right? In really one of the most fundamental ways. Most of people live in cities. You know, people that read my columns at National Geographic and stuff, you know, most of them are not going to go out to have access to really truly dark location where they see the Milky Way. You know, I've heard from some places where they think of the chocolate bar Milky Way somebody's talking about
oh, yeah.
Not the night sky, right? And so I've been personally looking as a communicator, as a popularizer of astronomy, is really what's kind of the next frontiers in being able to connect with people? And, you know, it's a natural fit to have technology brought into this arena, because that's what especially the younger generations really take to it. It's like a natural extension for them, but we're kind of teaching them that, you know, the real nature, the real life beauty, the reality is there for your taking. And technology is just another tool that allows us to get people excited about it and appreciate the night sky.
So I think this is all fascinating. I also think it's fascinating that Andrew, Dean tells me that you're a huge fan of Skyline Chili.
Yeah, this was, I couldn't believe this.
Like, I know, did he come to Cincinnati? He's like, no.
We met, and I mean, these guys are like, they're from Quebec.
Right.
And like, here he was like, oh, and I told him I'm from Cincinnati. He's like, oh, I love Skyline Chili. And so.
I knew this was
going to
come up.
You know. It has to. We're so excited.
The truth is coming out. My deep, dark secret. That's right.
Oh my gosh.
I've just. You know, I was very fortunate. I actually came into knowing about Skyline Chili down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Since for decades, I've been going there since I was a kid with my family to Skyline Chili, a little restaurant they have there. And then I find out it comes from, you know, Cincinnati. And then I was going through Cincinnati just a few years ago, and I was like completely dumbfounded by seeing, you know, so many of these
are everywhere.
That's right.
Everywhere, yeah. So, and then when I met up with Dean at this night sky retreat back in September in Virginia, I go, oh my gosh, I can't believe that's you're in the heart of where Skyline Chili is. Oh my gosh. And Dean, you were such a sweetheart. You sent me a care package, and which I got just very recently, and I've already partaken in my Skyline Chili dream. Thank you very much.
Isn't that nice? Did John have any?
And
no, I have not yet. So I'll have to make a trip out to Cincinnati to try it out.
Are you gonna come over to my place, John? I've got
it. Oh yeah, he's got the whole setup.
Really.
It sounds like, yeah.
Oh, perfect. I'll do that. It's a little closer. That's right.
Poor John had to listen to us talk about Skyline forever. He thought this is the most ridiculous thing. I apologize, John, to you ahead of time if it tastes terrible, because it's
delicious.
It's acquired
it's
taste.
It's delicious.
Spaghetti cheese and meat sauce. What's not to like about that? It's a natural
five
combination.
Ways. It's a five-way for me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and we got some of the poutine in Quebec, which is gravy, curd cheese, and fries. So that's not always as appetizing for a lot of people either, but it's a big hit.
Poutine is amazing. Well. That is like one of my top five favorite foods. So it is kind of like a meaty poutine.
Yeah, Skyline is our version of poutine, basically.
I mean, it's subpar thing. Because poutine is amazing, but yeah.
And look at this. Who knew that the night sky would bring us together?
Exactly.
The skyline would bring us skyline. Is there a skyline astronomy time?
We'll come up with something.
We need a sponsorship. Okay.
All right. I'm in on that, guys.
There
I'm in
go.
On that.
Yeah.
We'll work for Skyline Chile.
Yes, that's right.
So I think that even with the possibilities of Night Sky Odyssey, because we started this at home and we built a little amphitheater that can host almost 180 people at a time to do this night sky discovery, we're expanding throughout the world. So we'll be able to try foods from throughout the world with their Night Sky Odyssey.
Perfect.
Oh, this has been great. Well, thanks so much for talking with us today. Tell us about the Night Sky Odyssey project and good luck with the skyline out there.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so it's time for everybody's favorite, not game show, game?
Game.
But game. Rapid Fire Fact or Fiction. Black Hole Edition.
Whoa.
That's right. We're going black holes.
All right.
So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
I just want to tell everybody, too, that Dean was like, don't make any of them too hard. I was like, oh, sorry. What? You're afraid you're going to like...
That doesn't sound like what I would say.
Oh.
I don't remember this
in
rehearsal.
What he would say. So, he knows we're doing the Black Hole Edition, but he does not know what I'm going to ask him.
Uh-oh.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
There's no order, so they're going to kind of be all over the place.
Okay.
Are you ready?
The
most important question.
Yes.
I want to play this cool like it's a scientific question, but mostly for my own comfort level. Are we going to roll into one?
Yes. That is a very good question.
And yes, we are.
I answered that incorrectly.
Yeah, you're
I said, yes, that's a very good
a
question.
Way.
Well, it's part of just drawing in the audience.
And oh, like, okay.
What? Did he say yes?
Yeah,
I said, yes, that's a very good question. No,
I see what you did.
We're not going to get swallowed up by black hole.
I'm making a note. No, we are not.
No, that's one of the pluses is we're watching these black holes from very, very far away. I mean, they're thousands of light years away. The closest ones, the one at the center of our Milky Way galaxy is 20,000 light years away. There's no way it's going to come to us. It's not going to swallow us up. And so thankfully, yep, no black holes will take us out. Even that, the other big story of 2019 was the picture of the black hole that they got. And that is a black hole even farther away. That's even, millions of light years away. And so, they are very cool to observe and to study, but no threat to Earth.
Okay. That was good. I'm glad you weren't just like, probably not. Next question.
Yeah, this is absolutely
wait,
not. Yeah.
So I envision, so where are they? This is 20,000 miles away, 20,000 light years away. Mm-hmm. That's about as close I want them to get. Where
right.
else? Just
they
all
are,
over?
They are spread out through the galaxy, but there's some that were, some are closer than others, but none of them are very close. None are within.
Is it like Swiss cheese?
They're none of them.
Because I imagine the universe, like in the black hole.
And there's
like
all these holes in
like,
there.
That's what, like Swiss cheese.
Yeah, and that's one of the things about the name that kind of throws me, because they're not really like holes. They're not like you fall in and, you go somewhere. At least that's not my theory. My theory is they're still objects. They're still places. They're still like stars. They're still like, they're objects. What happens, though, when you fall in, that's where we get to the discrepancy. Nobody knows.
The terrifying part.
Well, nobody knows what happens when you go into a black hole, because when you fall in, nothing can get out. No light, no information. So you can't fall into a black hole and yell, "Hey, I'm okay. Everything's fine in here." You can't do that. There's no way to get
information.
That's
the terrifying nature.
Yes.
Of black holes.
They are terrifying. And right. So if you do fall in, yeah, you are in big trouble. That's for sure. But what happens to you, that's where people start to get a little science fiction-y and say, oh, maybe go to a different universe or a different part of the universe. Or
like a different dimension?
Yeah, but, you know, I'm kind of a romantic, so I just think, yeah, you're there, you're crushed, end of story. That's just my theory.
That is romantic.
Yeah, isn't it nice?
Wow, that's great. So how many are there?
We don't know. We only know of some of the ones that are relatively close, like in the, you know...
But not too close.
Not too close, okay, right? Fine. In the hundreds and thousands of light years away. And then we also know about the gigantic behemoth black holes that are in the center of big galaxies. Like the one they photographed was in a galaxy called M87. This is a galaxy that makes the Milky Way look like a little candle.
It has
trillions of stars in it. And so that's the big one that they got the picture of. But none of them close, but there are, we can see some that are in our galaxy and then the big ones in other galaxies.
When you say big, how big are they? This is like I'm a setup for a joke. Like, how big
how
are
big
they?
Are
like...
they? Well, the black hole in the center of our galaxy is the equivalent of 4 million suns.
Jeez!
So you take 4 million suns, cram them into one little place, that's a black hole.
But with no light whatsoever.
No light coming out of anything.
Oh, no.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Well, this has been an uplifting version of rapid fire.
Well, I just told you you're not going to die by black hole.
But they're so terrifying sounding.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to be fine, everybody. Yeah, nobody worry.
That's the takeaway.
Nobody freak out.
The black holes, let's just look at them.
Yeah, but from a very, very safe distance, let's look at the picture that some very smart people took.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Dean.
That's pretty much what I do as an astronomer.
That's my whole job.
You summed it up. I've always wanted to sum up what my job is.
I'm glad I could help. That's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Andrew Fazekas and John Marcotte for joining us. You'll find links to Night Sky Odyssey on our website, wvxu.org/lookingup.
If you're new to Looking Up in this new year, welcome. We've done lots of great interviews about space, science, even some pop culture. You'll find the archives of all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
We love talking about fascinating projects like Night Sky Odyssey. If there's a project or person you think we should be talking to, let us know. Our email is lookingup@wvxu.org.
You can subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts. And please give us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. Those are incredibly helpful and we really appreciate it.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.